This is The Talking Dead, a podcast dedicated to the AMC TV show, The Walking Dead.
Hi, my name is Jason.
And my name is Chris.
And this is The Talking Dead, episode number 255, recorded Thursday, March 10th, 2016.
It sure is. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. I know this is a tiny bit late this week. Sorry about that. Oh, stupid phone.
Phone is ringing.
The phone is ringing. Hold on a second.
While Chris is answering the phone, I'll give you a play-by-play. He's walked away from the recording desk that he normally records at, and he's turning the phone ringer off. He's walking back to the desk, and he's just about sitting down. He's now sitting down. He's put his headphones back on, and he's ready to go.
Did you commentary my whole...
I did. I could see what was going on in the reflection of the poster behind you. So,
well, at least it's a Walking Dead poster.
It is a Walking Dead poster, so yeah.
Well, should we just leave it in and just continue? Or should we start
listen
over?
Listen back later and see if you like it. If not,
all right. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Here we are. It's The Talking Dead number 255. This is our feedback show for the last episode of The Walking Dead called Not Tomorrow Yet.
Yes. And it's the last episode that episode number that will fit in a single byte of data. 255.
Wow. Can you believe we've done that many?
Yeah, that's scary. So next we have to go to double byte, and that gets us up to a very, very large number of episodes.
Right. In the I don't think we'll make it to that level.
No, well, we might, you know. The way... It could be, you know, I don't ever plan on dying. I plan on being at least 10,000-15,000 years old by the time I decide to quit and to move on to some kind of robot body.
Cool.
That's my plan, my current plan. So if that's the case and everybody does that, maybe The Walking Dead, maybe episodes of or shows will last for, you know, 600, 700 seasons. Like The Walking Dead, we're in season 700. This is episode 15,423.
Oh,
welcome
God.
Back to the feedback episode. You know, this could happen.
I suppose it could happen. That I think if AMC had anything to say about it, they'd want the show to go for 700 seasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the zombies would be robots. All the actors would be robots.
Yeah.
Probably all the trees would be robots.
Yeah. I'd be a robot. You'd be a robot. We'd be talking to other robots using probably not direct audio, but interneural communications, direct neural pathways to other people.
Sounds like you've got it all figured out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, what I think I was saying a second ago before we had a caller there was that, yeah, we're recording Thursday morning instead of Wednesday night. So sorry, it's a little bit late, but the podcast will still come out today. So it's just a few hours behind schedule.
Yeah.
And I was up at 5 a.m. this morning, so I'm a little tired.
Well, you know, record the episode and then take yourself a nap.
I think I just might do that. Just squeeze in a nap before the kids come home from school.
Excellent.
That would be perfect. Okay, so I want to start really quickly here with a first of all, and that is on our last episode, you had mentioned Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death,
mm-hmm.
and asked people what band released an album with that title.
Yep.
And you offered the extremely valuable extra points.
That's right.
For any correct answers. Well, a lot of people wrote in with the correct answer, and it is, of course, the Dead Kennedys.
Yes.
I did not know that, but the rest of the world did, so congratulations to all of you for getting some extra points.
Yeah, and you get everybody gets 3.25 points for that, and the points don't matter.
The points don't matter.
But I love the Dead Kennedys. I went through a whole Dead Kennedys phase in the probably early 90s, and they're fantastic. That's a great album, by the way. Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death.
I might have to look it up. I've never been a Dead Kennedys guy.
Police Truck, and I think Too Drunk to Fuck, maybe on that album, but I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up.
All right. Well, let's check it out. A lot of Dead Kennedys fans in our listenership, it sounds like. So Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm going to give you this.
Listener feedback.
Which is really just as good, I think.
The Dead Kennedys?
Yeah, why not?
Listener, sure, why not? Their surfer feedback? Punk style is, you know, just as good as a podcast, you know, recorded by two guys in Toronto.
Yeah, and if anyone out there can tell me what band released an album called Listener Feedback, More points.
More points.
We'll see. We'll see.
It's important to remember that the points don't matter.
We'll see what we get. Maybe we should come up with a point system. Maybe the points should matter, Jason.
All right.
I mean, I don't know why, but maybe we could be the first podcast on the internet to create a point system for our listeners, and that way we know who's winning the listenership.
That's a good idea. You get your feedback on the air, that's 5 points.
Right.
You know, you guess random stuff that random questions we ask. If there's like, you know, what number am I thinking of between 0 and 10?
8.
You know, right? No, don't you say it.
Oh, sorry.
But people write in, and if they get it right, I'll give them a point.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Maybe onto something here.
Maybe. But don't do that. Like, I wasn't actually thinking of a number at that time. I just was giving an example of what we could do.
Right. Okay.
So nobody will get points for writing in for guessing.
What's Jason's favorite color? There you go.
Oh, I don't have a favorite color.
I thought it was purple.
It was at one point, but I've gone through phases.
All right.
All right. First, we have an email from Dave in Earliesville, Virginia. Haven't even gotten past the cold open of Not Tomorrow yet, and I feel The Walking Dead has become very Lost-like, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
So this is a quick email to start here, and this is something I actually forgot to bring up when we were talking about the episode on our recap earlier this week. So the cold open with Carol and the music and the montage of her doing stuff immediately reminded me of the cold open of season 2 of Lost. I think it's season 2, right?
Yeah, it was the one where Desmond was in the, oh, spoiler for season 2 of Lost, by the way. Desmond was in the hatch and going about his daily routine to that music.
Right, but we don't know anything about Desmond at that point. We don't know anything about the hatch other than that it exists. And season 2 of Lost opened with something similar to this, but even more mysterious, right? Music playing, you see just hands doing things in the hatch, and then we're introduced to Desmond. And this opening of this episode of The Walking Dead really did remind me of that. So it turns out Dave as well, I'm not the only one.
Yeah, for sure.
So pretty cool. All right, next up is Steven in Seattle, Washington. Steven writes, "You guys are amazing. But I am sorry to say you are just plain wrong about the walker Carol kills in the beginning of Not Tomorrow Yet. My mouth dropped when Chris said it looked terrible. Then I burst out laughing because I had just told my buddies who I watched the episodes with that I thought that zombie was one of the best looking zombies. She looked like a zombie lifted right out of the comics. Her bulging eye, her rotting flesh, her gaping mouth, her torn up dress. And the way they filmed her just approaching the camera, getting closer and closer until she's right in your face, she looked legitimately scary as hell, despite the juxtaposition of the music. I love this scene, and I'm still shaking my head listening to you guys insult the work they put into it by saying, quote, the intern did it, and, quote, Nicotero lets something slide. For a couple of Canadians, you guys sure can be a little insensitive sometimes."
Wow.
Now, I think you should probably defend yourself by saying you disagreed with me to begin with.
No, I'm not, you know, I don't necessarily have to do that. I mean, everybody has their own opinion, no matter how wrong you are, Steve. Well, I don't know if we were necessarily insensitive. I don't know. Should we write an apology letter to Nicotero and that intern that did that scene?
You know, I'm pretty sure neither of them really care. Or heard our comments. Now, at the same time, I didn't mean to be insensitive. And we were joking around, of course. I personally think everything Steven said is actually pretty accurate. Like, the way it was filmed and this way the scene was staged was really good. I just thought the zombie itself looked a little weak. And maybe by weak, I mean different. It was very pale and white. And for some reason, I don't feel like we've seen a lot of zombies on the show that have that sort of white look to them. White as a sheet kind of thing. But to me, the first thing I thought is, oh, that looks like a Halloween mask. And I don't want to see zombies wearing Halloween masks. Unless it's an actual good-looking zombie that has, like, a Batman mask on or something, that I'd be okay with.
Well, you're getting into the themed zombies, which is not the best idea.
No, I know. That's not the greatest thing either. So, that zombie didn't really do it for me. When you compare some other feature zombies, like the teabag zombie way back in season 2, or the tree stump one that was growing into the tree, or just even some of your average other zombies like in a crowd kind of, right? For some reason, this one stood out a little bit, but I'm glad Steven liked it so much.
Yeah. No, to be honest, when I first watched this scene, it didn't stand out to me either good nor bad. Then you brought it up as bad. And then now Steven has brought it up as good. So I have no real opinion.
Both possibilities exist, that it is good and that it is bad. And I apologize if we upset the intern or Greg Nicotero.
So it's Schrodinger's zombie.
It is, yes. Yeah,
it's neither good nor bad until we find out whether Greg Nicotero did it.
That's right. It currently exists in both states like that cat.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Stephen, for writing.
All right. Next, we have Jerry in Southern Indiana, USA. Carol was using the acorns to make flour. She also grabbed arrowroot powder off the pantry shelf. My only thought about it was the fact that she was picking up all these acorns in the middle of a bunch of pine trees. I know, suspension of something or other.
Right. So pine trees don't make acorns?
Generally, no. They make pine cones.
They do. I have one in my backyard. It makes nothing but these dong-shaped pine cones that fall all over my yard.
You should paint them and make a mural.
Mural of dong pine cones?
No, just of something else. Maybe a scene from earlier in your life where you're holding up your newborn baby in triumph while, the neighborhood cats and dogs lap at your feet as how great you are.
That is the weirdest. That's one of the weirdest things you've ever come up with.
Really?
Well, I think it might be. I don't know. That's weird. Other people wrote in about the acorns, too, and how you can definitely eat acorns.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, they've got... Well, I wasn't sure, but apparently they do have tannins in them, which you have to boil out or soak out. You soak them, and then you can roast them or whatever, or crush them up into flour or something like that. So acorns apparently are pretty useful.
Cool.
And if you're stuck in the
forest... And you can paint them and make a mural.
You could also do that, yes. With the local wildlife surrounding you and lapping at your feet, whatever that means. So acorns are pretty useful, and you can eat them if you're stuck in the forest. So just keep that in mind for next time you're lost in the jungle somewhere.
They don't have acorns in the jungle.
Canadian wilderness. Lots of acorns there.
Bush.
In the bush, exactly. Okay. Zach in Bulls Gap, Tennessee writes, I'd like to say that I, as a layman... I'm not questioning the all-knowing Jason in all of his wisdom.
Smart.
But I'd like to make known that we have several similar-looking facilities here in Tennessee, and they all belong to cable TV providers. He's, of course, talking about the Saviors compound there.
The SETI program?
Yeah. He goes on, the wife and I just kept asking each other why they would even want to use such a building, since the dishes most likely have no use in a post-apocalyptic world. And there's got to be more secure facilities at their disposal.
Hmm.
So maybe. I mean, to me, that building didn't look too bad. It didn't. I mean, it was only one story. It looked like it was fairly solid, big concrete building or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, I can't think that there's too many windows on it. But there could have been more than I think. But I don't know. It seemed like an okay place to have an outpost. It didn't seem to me like the type of place where you would, you know, which would be your permanent home base.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, too, that this was primarily an outpost.
Yeah.
It was just some place to hold up and to maintain your presence in the area.
Exactly. Just have a few guys there just to keep watch, maybe almost like a lookout post or... maintain your presence, as you said, whereas your main home base is somewhere else. And that's where, you know, you've got 500 guys instead of 15 that were easily killed in their sleep.
Right.
And the consequences of which will not be good. I have a feeling.
No, it can't be. It can't be good. But I didn't know that this size of satellite or the size of dish could be used for uploading information or a link up to a satellite. So I guess I thought that something this big would simply be some kind of radio telescope of some kind.
And not just a TV transmitter.
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't have such facilities in Canada, I can tell you that.
You sure? We don't have stuff
No,
like
I'm
that,
absolutely not sure at all.
Oh. You just have never seen one.
I've never seen one. There's not, there isn't, I can tell you for sure that there's nothing like this within my field of view when I step out my front door.
Yeah. No, that doubly applies for me as well. But apparently they're all over Tennessee.
Well, I know there's on the 401, there's the CTV building, right?
Yeah.
That you drive by. And I assume that they have link ups for transmitting data to satellites to get across Canada, because this country's stupid big. And
stupid
we need,
big.
You know, satellite communication just to talk to each other. For television as well. And they don't have anything at this facility that size.
No, that's right. You know what? I think your point earlier in the week, though, about those satellite dishes being good spots for snipers or lookouts,
right,
is probably the main reason you would want to take over a building like this in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Unless you know, there's somebody else in another facility somewhere else in the country, because those satellites are still up there and they're probably still working. So if you can get this facility up and running and another facility up and running, you got yourself some communications.
You probably could, although I would imagine it takes some sort of expertise to run something like this, which may be hard to come by these days.
Maybe there was some Joe Schmo hold up in the facility at that point.
Yeah.
Going, I ain't going outside. That's crazy. Do you see what's going on out there? It's like, well, since you're in here and all this shit is still running, can you talk to the other scared dude, you know, in California?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can talk to him. I talk to him all the time.
Yeah, we chat all the time.
Yeah, we share porn.
That's what that whole system is for now.
Well, yeah, of course. It's a porn distribution system.
Everything degrades to that. I wonder, you know, I don't want to get into this, but satellites orbiting the Earth right now, like, I wonder how autonomous they really are. Like, if this happened in real life, would those satellites just continue to orbit the Earth for years to come?
Yep. They're in stable, as far as I know, they're in all the TV related and communication satellites are all in stable geosynchronous orbits.
And powered, like, by solar panels and stuff like that. So
powered by solar panels. So yeah. Until they break down, and they're basically designed not to break down, because sending some kind of mission up there with some people to fix it is an very expensive proposition. So they're designed to last a very long time with very little maintenance. So I assume the satellites are still up there, at least some of them. There's got to be thousands of those sons of bitches up there. There's still got to be some of them up there that are working.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. If they can make a satellite last forever, why can't they make my vacuum cleaner last forever?
They probably could, but it would cost you know, $14,000.
That's probably too much to pay for a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. Those satellites are billions of dollars each, right?
No kidding.
Hundreds of millions at least.
Yeah, quite a bit. Including the cost to get them up there, you're probably getting into the billions.
$10,000 a pound, I heard.
That's a lot of money.
For the space shuttle, but that shuttle's not flying anymore, so it's probably more expensive now.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to hire someone else to do it now.
Yeah, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next, we have an email from Antoine in New York. Hey, Chris and Jason, just wanted to say, for the first time ever, a TV show was hard to watch. From Abraham's heart-wrenching words towards Rosita to the saviors being killed in their sleep, knowing the situation could easily have been reversed. I did like Jesus and the priest being in the same car. Found that funny for whatever reason.
I don't know if whatever reason, but that is kind of funny, having Jesus and a priest sitting in a car together.
I'm still waiting for somebody to say, Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel. I got to start firing.
Because I think that's a country song.
Oh, probably.
Jesus, take the wheel. Like, somebody's in a situation where they're, the car is spinning out of control, and it's like, well, Jesus, take the wheel. I'm in your hands now. So I'm waiting for someone to say, Jesus, take the wheel.
It sounds like something I've heard before, though. That's probably an album released by a band at some point.
Or at least a song, I think.
At least a song. Yeah, all right. All right, next is Sheila in Toms River, New Jersey. It was so hard to watch this episode, on the edge of my seat the whole time. So hard to not think our group did the wrong thing, but we know the saviors would not have worked with our people without killing some of them, and forcing our group to be like the Hilltop. I feel like the consequences are going to be far worse now, though. One major difference between our group and the saviors: our group feels what they do. The saviors love what they do, i.e. keeping photos of bashed in heads.
Hmm.
Is that the distinction line, that as long as you feel bad about murdering people, it's okay, but if you relish it, that makes you evil?
No, probably not.
Certainly not in the real world. You know, killing people's killing people when it comes to, you know, modern society.
Yeah. I'm not sure that the feeling bad about it is a distinguishing fact, but it's definitely something.
It does help.
It's a factor.
It does. I mean, it makes you hopefully at least think about what you're doing and maybe question what you're about to do.
I'm sure there's serial killers out there that felt bad about murdering every single one of their 67 victims. It's like, I really feel bad about it, but I had to do it.
I can't stop. It's what I do.
I hated their stupid, ugly faces so much that I had to kill them, but I feel bad about it. I mean, it's not their fault.
Yeah. I guess at the end of the day, you're still murdering people.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy doing it, the saviors love what they do.
Oh, that's definitely... That's definitely brings you over the line.
And brings you into the realm of psychopath, I would guess. If you love that kind of thing.
Well, you can be perfectly sane and like killing people, I think.
I don't know. I'm not so sure. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on this podcast. And I'm going to say if you really love killing people,
that's a definition of some kind of psychological disorder.
I think it might be.
All right.
Taking life like that? I don't know. I think that I'm probably talking out of my ass.
Yeah.
Well, I know I am, but it just feels like that's the case to me. We'll probably get a psychiatrist or doctor of some kind write in and clarify that for me.
That'd be super awesome. I would give out 13 points for that.
Oh man, the points are just flowing today.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody with a medical doctor and or a psychiatrist, they deserve extra points just because of the time they spent in school and getting certified, and that's a lot of work.
It is.
I can give out points for the effort alone.
Points for effort, everybody.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Next, we have Sam in Texas. I thought this week's episode was pretty good overall. However, there was one part that I felt cheapened the overall moral ambiguity of the characters' actions in this episode. After Glenn finishes murdering that guy in his sleep, he sees the brutal pictures on the wall of all those people who have had their heads bashed in. While it was a disturbing and terrifying depiction of the saviors, I feel like it was a bit of a cop-out on the part of the writers to quickly undo the moral dilemma Glenn and Heath were having. It showed that maybe it was all right for them to kill them in their sleep after all. I think it would have been much better to leave the pictures out and Glenn really have to live with the repercussions of killing a man who may or may not have been all that bad.
I think Sam has a really interesting point here. You know, you put all this emotional pressure on Glenn about his first human kill and what that does to a person and what that does to Glenn specifically. And then you throw in this little thing that seems to indicate these people are terrible people. So does that remove a little bit of the weight that Glenn is experiencing from killing them? I'm not so sure it does, but I can see what Sam is saying.
Well, it gives us a depiction of basically it's proof that these are bad people in my mind. Whereas before, it was all a he said, she said. Oh, there's these guys that are forcing us to cut the head off of our leader, and they're taking half of our stuff all the time. It's like, oh, well, we can kill them. Like, the only proof they have is what they've heard from the Hilltop people and Jesus. Right. So now they show up and they kill these people in their sleep. You know, how sure are we that they are bad people? They're just, I guess from the people at the door, we know that they've kidnapped somebody and are requiring somebody's head. So that's a pretty good indicator, too.
Yeah.
That they're bad people. And then now we get this, that's just two guys at the front door, right?
Yeah.
Who knows who these people are that they're sleeping? Are they actual saviors or are they other people that are being held captive?
Yep.
In order to get other groups of people to do their bidding.
Yeah. And the question boils down to, like, at what point is it okay to kill innocent people or kill living people? You know, and is it ever okay to do that? I mean, yeah, as you said, we just have information from one group about another group that says they do bad things, at least from the way we see it, and they're taking all our stuff. So Rick's immediate reaction is we have to eliminate them. And that's pretty harsh.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, there's two guys at the front door. They seem like dicks, but whatever. I encounter dicks every day. I don't jump to immediately to murder.
Well, yeah. I mean, you encounter dicks every day, but you don't encounter the kind of dick that has your sister held captive and forcing you to cut the head off of your boss.
Or, yeah, cut the head off. Stab him in the gut anyway.
Oh, they wanted his head, right?
Oh, they wanted his head, yeah, of course.
So if you bring me his head and I'll release your sister.
Yeah, no,
that's a special kind of dick.
It is a special kind of dick. You're really, really right about that. But still, it's just it's a moral question that probably has no easy answer, right?
No. He jumps to it, right? He's like, oh, we'll kill them all. No problem.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what we do.
Exactly. It's what we do. That's the first thing they try. And Morgan is the only guy who stood up and said, maybe we can just scare them away. Maybe we can show up, you know, make a showing of power and they'll back down. You know,
yeah.
I don't think that would have happened, but that's besides the point. The point is that sometimes maybe there are other options.
Yeah.
But Rick and everybody else seem to just be like, forget those other options. Even though I want everyone to agree, we're doing this anyway.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. All right. Val on the internet. Glenn seeing the Polaroids of dead people on the wall. It's a small thing, but I had a feeling that when Glenn saw the Polaroids on the wall after killing that savior on behalf of Heath, it helped to make him feel like he was killing someone who deserved it. So this is the point. A true psychopath and not some random innocent person. If I'd been in Glenn's shoes, I would have assumed the Polaroids were the men the sleeping savior had killed. And let's not forget that back at the Hilltop, the Hilltoppers said Negan's people had beaten one of their people to death. Maybe this sleeping savior was in charge of delivering those kinds of beatings.
Mm.
You are in charge of beatings.
If we need somebody's head beat in until they are dead, you're the guy.
You are the guy to do it.
Yeah, that's your job now.
That's right. So keep that in mind. If you don't do your job, I'm going to give the beating job to somebody else.
And you don't want that.
Oh,
you want to keep the beating job because the beating job comes with a bat. And if the job goes to somebody else, we got to take that bat.
Yeah, and you might end up with a far worse job.
Yeah, you'll have you have to burn the poop in the shitter.
that's
no good at all.
That just comes with a bucket.
Yeah.
Can't do anything with a bucket.
And a mask.
Not even a mask. That's the problem.
Right.
Maybe a shovel.
Yeah.
Or a pair of really thick gloves.
And a stick.
All right. Well, yeah. I don't know. I hope Glenn, from a character perspective, I hope this weighed on him greatly. And I hope he, you know, doesn't just sort of move on from it and now become like a person killer constantly. You know, I don't want him to lose his desire not to kill living people.
Yeah.
Right? Because Glenn's a good dude. And we like to see Glenn thrive.
Yeah, we like to see him suffer when he has to murder.
Exactly. Exactly.
We don't want him to not suffer when he murders. So if he becomes a non-suffering murderer now, it'd be bad.
It'd be bad. It'd be bad for Glenn. It would be bad for everybody.
Yeah. All right, next we have an email from Jeremy in East York. I understand that we know Negan is a bad guy, but all Rick and the gang have to do is go on. What? All they have to go on is one attack they saw and the word of Jesus and the others at the Hilltop, which is what I was saying, I guess. What could possibly justify this? At the very least, they could have done a little recon to get some more information before killing at least a dozen people. From an in-universe point of view, have they gone too far? Do you think that because they attack unprovoked that they deserve whatever happens to them now?
Yeah, well, this is what we've been talking about. They attacked based on potentially shaky information and definitely unprovoked when it comes to this. I mean, they're responding to provocation inflicted on a different group of people.
Yeah, third-party provocation.
Yes, and I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to them now, but I'm not going to be surprised if Negan does not react well and he retaliates in some way. I'm not going to say whatever he does, is deserved by Rick and the group, but I'm not going to be surprised if he retaliates in a strong and brutal fashion.
Oh, there's going to be some retaliation. We even have Maggie and Carol currently kidnapped, which is going to, you know, bring on some retaliation in the next episode. I hope, unless they switch gears and make it a Morgan episode.
Well, you know, I hate to tell you this. Maybe I'll save, you know what, I'll save this for the end.
All right.
Remind me at the end. Yeah, so anyways, there's going to be some retaliation. Whether they deserve it or not, I don't know. That's a question that's hard to answer. But if you, two things. If you can't stand the heat, you better stay out of the kitchen is thing number one.
Thing one, yeah.
And if you make your own bed, you have to sleep in it.
Right.
Those kind of mean the same thing, but I think you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. You know, if you it's your cake, you have to lie in it.
Right.
That kind of thing.
That's right. You make a cake, you have to put your face in it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy, for that. Next up is Justine in NorCal. You could argue that our gang acted like the governor's crew in attacking the Saviors. In season 4, Tara and the others took the governor's word that Rick's group was evil, just as Rick's group took Jesus' word that the Saviors are evil, with one key difference. Sasha, Abraham, and Daryl did meet some of Negan's crew and definitely learned firsthand these folks were no good. So is that scene, is that bit the difference here, where they didn't just have the Hilltop information to go on, they also had firsthand experience with the motorcycle gang on the highway?
That's true. They had so it's not just the words. We had two, right? We had the motorcycle gang and the two dicks at the front door, right? So those are two pretty good pieces of intel to prove that these are bad people.
Although the two guys at the front door, I mean, by that point, it's kind of too late, right? If they were doing recon, not intending to attack, but just to take a look, and they discovered that those guys, yeah, were dicks, then I would say that's additional information. But by the time they knew those guys were jerks, it was sort of like, well, we're killing y'all anyway.
Yeah, but there was a backout option too, right? Rick had mentioned if there's anything we don't like, we back off and come up with a different plan.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, if they showed up at the front door and it was all a lie, that these two guys would be like, what are you doing here? It's like, I brought this head. It's like, oh, gross. What the hell's that head for? Get out of here. you know, would they still have killed these two guys and gone in and killed everybody if these two guys didn't match up with what their expectations were?
I'm going to say yes. But you're right. I mean, that kind of sort of analysis of the situation should have taken place, but I just don't think it did, right?
No, and I agree with you, but I'm just saying that they, you know, if those two guys, those two guards at the front door were completely out of line with what they were expecting,
yeah,
they had a plan in place to back off.
Yeah. You also have to remember there's a third instance in the Daryl episode in the first half of this season with when he got his motorcycle stolen. That was an encounter with Negan's group of Saviors as well.
Yeah, right.
Whether or not Daryl realized that at the time, I don't know. But was there any indication that you can think of that would have led him to believe that those were the same people? I mean, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if the name was ever dropped or anything like that.
I think that's the first time we encountered the name Negan. I don't think that but I could be wrong. I'd have to go back.
I don't think so. I don't think his name was mentioned in any of those scenes. I don't think. And if I'm not mistaken, well, obviously, you know, he stole the motorcycle. But Daryl didn't know that until the motorcycle showed up in this episode.
Right, which is way after they killed and murdered everybody.
Yeah, way after, of course. So although we think those are Negan's people, or we know they are, I don't know if it's realistic for in-show, like characters in the show, to make that connection.
Right.
At least not yet.
And how shitty of a job did they do searching that building after they were done? Because there was a guy with a motorcycle still in there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Right? Like, you could see maybe a guy hiding somewhere. Like, there could be good hiding spots in there.
That's stormtrooper level of incompetence. Door's locked. Move on.
That's right. This door's locked. It can't be in there.
Yeah.
I think it's possible only because a human being could hide in a building pretty effectively. Now they should have found him, but let's say he could hide. The motorcycle, he wasn't hiding with the motorcycle. When he realized that they'd cleared out the building, he came out of his hiding spot, grabbed the motorcycle, and then went for it.
Right. So he could have been hiding in the rafters, but Daryl missed the motorcycle, or whoever searched that room didn't know that that was Daryl's motorcycle, even though it must have been Jesus that was searching that room, because he would be the only one that didn't know that Daryl had that motorcycle.
Yeah, you would think so. Everyone else was in Alexandria, so must have been Jesus.
So it's just a confluence of multiple factors, right? So guy hiding, they didn't see him, and Jesus found the room with the motorcycle, didn't think anything of it.
Exactly. Not one single thing is going to bring the plane down. It's a failure of multiple systems.
Yeah.
Right? So.
All right.
What's that? You're next, I think.
Was that all right? So we have Floyd on the internet. Is that where we're going?
Yep.
All right. So we have Floyd on the internet. Just a thought. What if those Polaroids on the wall were just to help keep those two in line as they were innocent hostages?
Exactly. So they just don't know. I mean, this could have been the Negan's like prison outpost. This could have been his jail where,
right.
I mean, I got to think he probably just kills anyone he doesn't like. But let's say these were hostages. They had some value to him. And this is where he keeps those people. Now, Rick and the gang just went and raided the guy's jail, killing people who aren't even on his side. And it has basically no effect other than to piss Negan off royally.
Or maybe he'll show up and say thank you.
I was really worried
about these guys. These guys were they were a splinter group and they were a real hassle. So thanks for doing that. And as a thank you, I'm going to beat your head in.
Yeah, that's right. I think it would be odd to put photos of people you've murdered on the wall of like on a jail cell wall of a captive you had.
Maybe it was his family. Was his friends and family.
Oh,
this is a reminder of why I want you to stay in this room and sleep most of the time.
That is harsh. Kill your whole family and then make you look at pictures of it the whole time? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This Negan guy is terrible.
He is terrible.
All right. Paul in Bakersfield. I agree that the guys would have woken up. I live on a very busy street that is one of the main streets in my town. Often ambulances, fire trucks, or police officers responding to emergency calls will drive by with their sirens on no farther than 30 feet from my bed, and I don't wake up. While I sleep through speeding cars and loud sirens, I've woken up immediately from a branch outside my window barely tapping the glass. My brain has just gotten used to sirens and traffic, but a slight tapping might mean danger, so I wake up.
That's exactly what my point was when we talked about this scene, was that your brain filters out stuff that it doesn't deem to be dangerous, mm-hmm. like the sirens and crap going on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived on busy streets. I lived close enough to a fire hall when I lived near you, Chris,
yep.
that in the summer when my window was open and the doors were open in the fire hall, I could hear the alarm that went off telling the firefighters that they needed to get in their trucks. And it usually took between 30 and 45 seconds between hearing that and hearing the sirens of the fire vehicles as they left the building.
Well, you were right next door to it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Just right next door. And I got used to it, too. I stopped hearing them after a while. They absolutely did not wake me up. But if someone came into my bedroom,
uh-huh.
I would wake up. Maybe not the cat. Maybe not my wife. But if I heard the front door open... even if it was somebody clicking the lock and then the door opening, I'd be awake immediately.
Yeah, unless you had noise-canceling headphones on.
Yeah, well, there was a time that the police broke down the door.
That's a whole different story.
I
think you've told the story on the podcast, though, so yeah. I'd love to refer to the episode number in case someone wants to hear that. But
they didn't break down the door because of anything I did. They got the wrong apartment.
Right.
By the way, it wasn't me they were after.
No.
Once they cleared the apartment, they took the handcuffs off me and everything was fine.
Still a good story.
It's called swatting.
Yeah.
Look up swatting. That happened to me.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So, yeah, absolutely. If somebody's coming into my room. Now, I know from experience that somebody coming into my room and I'm not expecting it does wake me up. But I also know that I don't do anything about it. I had somebody bring my roommate home one time because they thought he had a concussion and woke me up so that I made sure that he was okay. And when this stranger came into my room, I woke up and sat there and had a conversation with him. I was not afraid. I was not awake. I was not worried for going for weapons or anything. My ninja skills were incredibly lacking as far as personal safety goes,
mm-hmm.
but I did wake up.
But it's because they brought your roommate home. So he was there too. So you knew like this was a friend of a friend kind of.
Yeah, I have no idea. To this day, I have no idea who this guy was. I'm not sure it was a friend of a friend. I thought it was more of a, hey, I know that guy. He was a DJ at the club I was at, and he fell down drunk into the street. And I asked him where he lived, and he told me, and I brought him home.
Could have been a cab driver, for all you know.
Could have been anything. I don't know.
Wow.
Could have been a murderer. Picking up this guy, going, I'm going to tell me where you live so I can murder everybody else where you live, and then brought him home.
Well, luckily that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but I'm extremely surprised that these guys did not wake up.
Yeah, well, if you're going to get stabbed in the head, you might as well make it happen while you're asleep.
Yeah. All right, next we have Tom, Trucker Tom on the road. About Abraham, his character comes across to me as someone who has extreme difficulty facing, processing, or expressing anything emotionally charged. Instead of saying things directly, as he falls back on these words, circumlocutious?
He falls back on these weird circumlocutions, I think is the word.
Circumlocutions, like pouring the Bisquick. And I looked up circumlocutions. I can't say it, but I looked it up, and it means paraphrases, indirectness, roundaboutness, that kind of thing. So it's just a weird way of saying things. Thanks, Tom, for expanding my vocabulary just a little bit.
It's definitely a sesquipedalian word, though.
See there, now my vocabulary has expanded again, but I don't know what that word means.
Look that up later.
I don't even know what it was anymore.
Sesquipedalian, it means using unnecessarily large or complex words.
I like words that describe themselves.
It's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So he goes on to say he clearly struggled for some time with his feelings towards Sasha and his relationship with Rosita. After hearing that that man he almost killed say he saw his dead wife when he was certain he was about to die, then Abraham heard Sasha's voice when he was being choked to death, he stopped avoiding the issue and came to a decision. However, when confronted by Rosita and he was packing to leave, his inability to deal with emotionally charged situations came to the fore, and when forced to say something, he said in a cruel, thoughtless, dickish way. His and Rosita's relationship was built for him on the situation and not on love. Now that he has fallen in love and doesn't want the casual relationship anymore, shorthand, I thought you were the last woman alive, and you are not.
Right. So what Trucker Tom is trying to say is just that Abraham is not very good at expressing himself.
Yeah, he doesn't have the best words.
No, and so he defaults to these weird circumlocutions.
Yeah. That was a Donald Trump reference, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
He said Donald Trump said he's highly educated and has the best words.
Oh, good. Well,
but
there you
Abraham
go.
Does not.
No, Abraham does not. So, you know, I can see that, but it takes a certain amount of, I think anyways, a certain amount of cleverness to come up with witty, relevant one-liners. I'm not saying that he speaks in witty and relevant one-liners, but you know, I just feel like you can feel the fact that Abraham is a character with writers and not a real human being because of the way he talks.
Yeah, because if you don't know what to say and you're confused about the emotions, you're going to say things like, how do you do that thing with the stuff and or whatever?
Exactly.
You're not going to say, something about Bisquick and come up with witty sayings. You're just going to say, tell me about that thing.
That's right.
What thing, Abraham? Well, that thing where you did with your wife there where she's pregnant.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Did you mean to pregnancize her? You know?
Yeah.
That's how it's going to come out.
If you want to ask someone that question, what you're going to say is, before you guys decided, like, did you think ahead of, see, I can't even do it. Did you think ahead of time about having a baby? Or why would you want to have a baby in this universe? Not before you poured the Bisquick, were you trying to make the pancakes? You know?
Hey, Glenn, why baby?
Yeah, that works too. So
how baby, why? What?
Yes.
Exactly.
All right. Next up is Chantal in Brisbane, Australia. I'm about to rant about Abe. He's always been an insensitive, moronic, arrogant, wife-beating arsehole. Have you forgotten how his wife was more scared of him than the zombies? He's only ever happy when he's killing stuff or playing with weapons. Dick. Even though his stupid one-liners are immature attempts at grabbing attention, you don't know shit about this shit. Seriously, you'd tell your 6-year-old to stop showing off if he said something like that. Except a 6-year-old would probably construct a better sentence. The long and short of it is, I cannot wait until somebody caves his stupid skull in. Phew, that felt good.
Well, it might be Negan.
Yeah, it might be.
Or Negan, or maybe the guy that does it for Negan is dead now, so Negan will have to appoint somebody else. And maybe that could be Abraham, or it could be done to Abraham by the appointee.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be Abraham, but you never know what twists and turns this season might take. But if Negan's group is prone to bashing in skulls, and I think they might be, maybe Abraham is first in line.
Yeah, could be.
I don't know. There's, There's some indicators there. I think, look, he's fallen in love, even though he's a dick to one woman. He's fallen in love with another woman. He feels like he's getting his life on track. Perfect time for a skull cracking.
Yeah, it's true. All right, next we have Brianna on the internet. Regarding Abraham's comments when he was breaking up with Rosita, my dad and I had a disagreement about this, but then I started to see his side a bit. My dad then argued that what Abraham was doing was actually kind, a kind act of sorts. He was being so hateful so that he could allow Rosita to hate him, maybe. I could see that side of it as well, but I still think it's terrible, and Rosita will have a hard time trusting anyone again.
I think that is very true. She will have a hard time with anybody. But maybe that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to, like, not let her down easy, but let her down hard so that, you know, she doesn't have any sympathy for him. Like, she just hates him, and she can move on from that at some point. Does that make any sense at all?
It does make sense, but I'm not sure that Abraham is smart enough to pull that off.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that could be true.
So, I think it's the brutal truth is what it is. I don't think it's a thing he said in order to make sure that the relationship was severed once and for all and for good, and that she'll get over it quickly.
That may be, maybe that will be the intent. I can't talk at all.
Yeah. You don't have the best words either.
No, I certainly don't.
Worse no good.
Maybe that will be the consequence of this method of breaking up, but I don't think, as you said, Abraham sort of intended it that way.
Yeah.
Right. All right, next, Eric in upstate New York. Why would Abraham dump Rosita and give up a sure thing before he sealed the deal with Sasha? It hasn't seemed to me that Sasha has been as receptive to a relationship as he has. Do you think we're seeing a setup for a rejection by Sasha, leaving old Abe all alone again?
Oh, man.
That would be a bummer. I mean, his whole plan is going to backfire then, and he'll be all by himself and depressed again, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen then. The thing about this is Sasha seemed to indicate that there was some interest there, but she said, I won't do anything until you sort your shit out with Rosita.
Right, which he did,
which he's now done, I guess, yeah. So Sasha still could reject him. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. She might
Maybe
still.
That was bullshit. Maybe she was just saying that so that she wouldn't have to deal with this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't like you, but I don't want to tell you, so I'm going to say I can't do anything because you got this other relationship. Meanwhile, he hears that as I got to dump her ass so that I can get in a relationship with you, and now Shasta's going to say, well, no. I appreciate the thought, though.
That's going to put him in a pretty poor situation.
It is, and which might be the impetus for him going to Negan's side and becoming the head basher dude.
I got to get out of this group. Everyone here hates me, and nobody loves me, so I'm going to go and crack some heads.
Yeah, I got women problems, so the only resolution I can think of is bashing people's heads in for this other guy over here.
Poor Abraham. I do kind of hope things work out for him, but I'm starting to feel more and more like they're not going to.
Yeah.
So... all right. You're up next.
Heather in Kansas City, Missouri. On Carol's list, R equals Ryan, Lizzie and Mika's dad.
There it
Carol
is.
Carol killed him before he turned because Lizzie couldn't. Also, I'm not sure I'm on board with Carol and Tobin, but I think Carol's feeling overwhelmed by the amount of violence and people she's killed and feeling like she needs some normality and stability. I think Tobin appeals to her because he's not so damaged. He hasn't killed people and has killed fewer walkers than she has. He's just a regular guy.
Yeah. So first of all, R is Ryan, Lizzie and Mika's dad.
What did we say it was?
We didn't know. That was the problem.
Right.
We sort of figured out the rest of the list. But R, that first one was R. So that was the first living human she killed, eh?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, I guess you wouldn't think they're going to screw that up, but I did post an article on our Facebook page about an analysis of that list and how accurate it was, and they seem to, Movie Pilot, I think, did that, and they seem to find some problems with it.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the people she's killed, whether they were maybe already dead yet, things like that. So ultimately, it doesn't matter. That's Carol's list, and that's how sort of she feels she's behaved, I guess, in the zombie apocalypse. So,
yeah. I mean, and there's technicalities too, right? If someone has jumped off a roof and committing suicide, and on the way down, you shoot them with a shotgun, killing them, you're still guilty of murder.
True.
So it's, you know, even though whether they were on the way out or not, if you stab somebody in the head and they're not a zombie and they're still alive, you have committed murder.
Yeah. So what you're saying is it's a little bit of a gray area. She may consider something a kill where somebody else doesn't, and vice versa.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the law as opposed to reality. And we know that the law and reality diverge at some certain points.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's all a matter of how she perceives it.
Got it. And then Tobin is just a sort of regular guy. You know, he's done some stuff, but up until this point, he's been living a fairly easy life in Alexandria. So Carol's seen all this shit, and I think her hardened personality is balanced by Tobin being a nice, sweet, regular dude.
Oh, I've been that dude.
You've been the regular guy, have you?
I've been the regular guy. I wasn't actually a viable relationship at the time. I was just not work, in quotes.
You were not.
I was not
you were
work.
Easy.
Yeah, I was the guy that was not work, because her whole rest of her life was this shitty job she had, and I just represented everything that wasn't that, had nothing to do with me.
Okay.
And I had to break up with her because she moved and wouldn't tell me where she lived.
that's a bad sign.
It was a bad sign. I felt bad about doing it. It's like, you won't tell me where you live, I can't date you. I just can't do it.
You know, that's a bad sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe she was homeless.
She wasn't.
Oh, all right.
She moved in with some other people that she worked with.
Well, so it all became about work.
Oh, it was all a big ball of friggin' disaster.
All right. Well, let's move on. Ben.
That falls into Jason Shit did in the 90s.
Yeah, there's definitely something there that we have to mine somehow.
Yeah.
All right, Ben in rainy Kent, England. Ben's a first-time emailer, he let me know, which is
all
great.
Right.
Always love hearing from new listeners. Ben writes, there was loads I enjoyed about Season 6, Episode 12, most of which you covered, but there was a couple of things you didn't mention. Did you guys notice the blood splatter on the camera during the raid shootout? I love this little touch. It made an already exciting scene a bit more real and engaging, and I don't remember it happening before on the show. Also, the pictures above Glenn's second human victim, I thought Glenn found these comforting in a strange way, like it kind of justified what he'd done. What do you think? I think we've already covered that, but why don't you read the next email, Jason, just regarding the blood splatter on the camera?
Sure. It comes from Jenna in Kentucky. Kentucky. Yes, that's right. I said that right. All right. Can I just say, I hate when they do the blood splatter on the camera lens trope. It completely takes me out of the moment, breaking that fourth wall, and it reminds me that I'm not in this intense moment with the characters. I'm just in my living room watching it, and it eases my tension what there may have been.
Erases my any tension. Anyways.
Yeah, okay, so it erases my tension.
Right. So I guess it can go either way. Ben loves it. And Jenna hates it. It's not the first time they've done it on the show, though. I can't pull it out right now, but we've seen that at least once before where blood hit the camera.
Yeah. No, I do remember that happening. I can't remember where or when, but I remember noting it in this episode mentally saying, oh, we get that again.
Yeah, that again. If they do it too much, then yes, I have a problem with it. But as it stands right now, I don't mind it. I think I'm a little bit more on Ben's side. I mean, if you are immersed in the show and you are there with the characters, let's say you are, you know, running behind Rick into that building and he slices a zombie and the blood splatters on you, that's kind of like what they're getting at, right? It hits the camera, hits your face. So I think I'm okay with it, but I certainly don't want to see it all the time.
That's true. Do we ever have a movie where the cameraman is or the camera is a mute character, similar to the Half-Life series, where the main character is completely mute and everybody just talks to him as he goes through his first person life? Have we ever got a TV show or a movie like that?
I don't know. I bet you it exists, but I can't really think of one.
I think we're due.
I think we might be due, yeah. If I can't think of one, it probably didn't get enough publicity if there is one.
Or it's such a stupid idea that nobody's willing to do it because, you know, yeah, that's dumb.
It's a terrible idea. All right. Kate in Sydney, Australia. The comment The comment Tobin makes about Carol being a mom is that she can do all of the terrifying things she does because she is a mom. She's everyone's surrogate mom. She makes cookies, she provides comfort, and as Tobin says, she can do the hard stuff too. It makes make the hard decisions. She does what she has to do to protect everyone. I guess like a mother would do, you know? You protect your children, you protect your family. You have to make the hard decisions, but you also care for them and feed them and clothe them and make them cookies and give them baths and stuff like that.
And kill sick people, and when you have a psychopathic little girl, you get to kill her too.
That's right.
Flowers.
Just like a good mother would do.
That's right. I have to protect my family by killing this little girl.
Yep.
I feel bad about it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Do it anyway. That's right.
All right. We have June in Arklow, Ireland. With regard to Carol's reference to Denise's involvement in Wolfgate, I think she's referring to the fact that Denise agreed to help the wolf at Morgan's request, treating his wound and even giving him valuable antibiotics. The others might not be familiar with the particulars of the Hippocratic Oath.
This makes a ton of sense. We were questioning what Denise's involvement really was there and why Carol was worried about revealing that to everyone. This makes sense. It's because she was treating this wolf, who's a really bad dude who attacked Alexandria.
Right.
Or at least that's what they thought at the time. Now, I don't think people would necessarily think that Denise is all bad for this. I mean, if someone is suffering, if someone's hurting, you treat them. That's what you do, whether they're your enemy or not. At least that's what a doctor, sort of the approach a doctor would take.
Should take.
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, I guess not everyone is quite as level-headed in this little community. So Carol at least thinks that they have to keep this a secret, at least for now.
Yeah. Because doctors go through ethical training, right? Where they discuss the Hippocratic Oath and what that means and what the scenarios, you know, examples, extreme scenarios where the Hippocratic Oath would come into play. And one of them is, I would assume, that somebody that is an enemy comes in with an injury. Do you treat them? The answer is, of course you do.
They may be an enemy, but they're still a living human being.
That's right.
Yeah. So, but I can see. I mean, I think June has hit the nail on the head here with what sort of Carol is feeling about the whole situation.
Yep.
Okay, finally, we've got just a sort of a note here that a bunch of people sent in. So Crystal in Philadelphia, PA, and Anthony in Kettering, England, both wrote in to let us know. And Anthony said, I read somewhere that one of the other two head sculptures that were being chosen to be Gregory was actually the head sculpture of Johnny Depp. Is this role better for you both?
As a severed head?
I think he did an okay job.
I think he did a pretty good job.
I do too. So one was Greg Nicotero. The one that they used was Nicotero's head. One of the others was Johnny Depp, and I heard Greg Nicotero talking about this. He said he couldn't remember who the third one was now, but I kind of wish Rick had picked up Johnny Depp's face and punched him in it a bunch of times.
Just because?
Because I want to do that every time I see him on screen.
Yeah.
But I didn't mind this role because he didn't have to say anything or do anything.
He was just the mold guy.
Yeah, it was a head mold of his for something else. They probably had it lying around the...
Oh, they would have had it for any number of friggin' characters that he's played over the years. It's like, who do we have a head mold of? It's like, well, we got 30 of Johnny Depp from the 70-some-odd roles that he's played that he's needed prosthetic makeup on. So, you know, pull that mold out. And we got this other guy here. He was... who knows what the hell he did? And then they built heads around it.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a whole warehouse of Johnny Depps. I mean, just go grab a couple and we'll use those.
Yeah. Well, we have to get permission, though. You got to, you know, call Johnny Depp's people and say, we'll offer you $15 per mold that we already have. And Johnny Depp's like, yeah, make it 40 and you got yourself a deal.
Make it 40 and we're good.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in. We do have a call, but I'm going to finish off the podcast, and we're going to play that call at the end because it's a little spoilery. And to be honest, it's something I want to talk about a little bit that is sort of half speculation, half spoilery, especially for the comic. So we're going to...
Spoileration?
Spoileration, something like that.
Speckleror?
Speckleration. I don't know. So stick around for a few minutes if you want to hear that. Otherwise, though, let's talk about next week on The Walking Dead, which will be fun because I haven't played this in a long time.
Next week on The Walking Dead.
Nice. That one, I haven't heard that in a while. So next week's episode is titled The Same Boat, and it is directed by Billy Gearhart, who has done previous episodes of the show. He did Cherokee Rose in season 2, Trigger Finger in season 2, Sick in season 3, Made to Suffer in 3, and then Crossed in season 5. So he's done a bunch.
Yeah.
Two things I want to mention here. One, I read a description of this. I don't know if it was official, though. This came from SpoilerTV.com. And the description, I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically referencing Tara and Heath out on the road. And I started thinking, oh my God, they're going to do it again. In the first half of this season, we had the Glenn death cliffhanger, and the next episode was about Morgan, strictly Morgan backstory.
Right.
Now we have the Maggie and Carol hostage cliffhanger, and they're going to do a bottle episode about Heath and Tara on the road.
Oh, right.
Now, I'm not, like I said, even Spoiler TV said these are not confirmed yet. These are rumors. So this could be totally way off, could be completely way off base, could have nothing to do with it. And I have seen the previews for next week's episode or the next episode, and it's not all Hera and Tara. Hera and Tara.
Well, Tara's pregnant, right?
Yes.
So I'm sure that they shot a couple of things, but we can't have a whole episode with her in it.
No.
Like, how many things can they put in front of her?
That's the thing. It doesn't make sense to me that it would be an episode just about the two of them because she's pregnant. It makes a lot more sense that they'd write her off the show temporarily on a 2-week run. So, you know, we don't have to show her and she can go and give birth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say is I've seen the previews for this upcoming episode and all of them show scenes regarding the hostage situation and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I don't think we are going to get a Tara and Heath episode. And I'm not going to say I'm glad about that because maybe it would be a fantastic episode. You never know. But it would feel like sort of following the same pattern that they used in the first half of the season.
It would. I hope they don't do that.
Right. So anyways, the whole reason of bringing all this up is that we want your title reads. So don't forget to record yourself saying the title of the episode and send it in to us. The Same Boat is what it is. And we got a bunch for this week. Hopefully we get a bunch of good ones for next week, too.
Cool.
All right. We're going to wrap things up here. As I said, just after the end of the podcast, we'll do a call from a listener that's a little bit spoilery. Just one more thing. But otherwise, thank you so much for listening, everyone. If you want to send in more feedback or comments, if you agree with us or disagree with us, whatever, send in your comments to talkingdeadpodcast@gmail.com. Or visit our website and click on send voicemail to record a message right into your computer. And then follow us on Twitter at Talking Dead or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheTalkingDead. Please like us over there. And I post news articles and stuff, not as much as I used to, but I do post things there that, you know, is sort of fun to check out. And it's just a little bit of bonus content kind of for everyone over there. Just before we go, if you want to use our Amazon links, we would greatly appreciate it. Visit talkingdeadpodcast.com/Amazon and click on the country of your choice. Doesn't cost you anything extra, but a tiny little cut of every purchase you make comes back to us and is just a great way to help support the podcast. And finally, something I haven't mentioned in a long time is iTunes reviews. It would be wonderful if you went over to iTunes and, left us a review. You know, doesn't have to be a 5-star, although those are greatly appreciated. It can be anything. It should be honest, but it is a really good way for, you know, iTunes to take notice of us and move us up the charts a little bit and stuff like that. So visit iTunes, find our show and leave us a review. That would be fantastic.
That would be cool. We haven't talked about that in a very long time.
No. And I want to find a way to integrate that in a little bit more. There was a long time ago where we used to read some of those reviews because they were fun, but I do have a giveaway upcoming. And if I can find a way to integrate iTunes reviews, like leave a review and be entered in the giveaway or something like that.
Right.
It might have to be a manual process, and I got to do things like check the contesting rules around iTunes reviews and stuff like that. But I'll try to do that, and hopefully we can announce the next giveaway on Monday's show when we recap the same boat. So I've got kind of a cool giveaway for that one coming up. So let's see if we can make that happen.
Cool.
All right. That's going to do it. Until next time, everyone, my name is Chris.
My name is Jason.
Thanks for listening.
Aloha.
All right. We got one more thing to do here, everybody. So I'm going to play a call. This comes from Jordan on the internet.
Hey, Chris and Jason. Love the podcast. I was just wondering, do you guys think that The Walking Dead show is starting to follow the storyline of the comics a little bit too closely? I mean, just the last couple of episodes, obviously we're going towards the Negan Savior storyline with the Hilltop and possibly the Kingdom. And really, I just hope that the show is able to surprise and keep the show interesting for people who actually read the comics. And especially with Scott Gimple, the showrunner, who really likes to follow the comics, I hope that he can find new ways to make the show interesting and not just sort of recreate scenes from the comic book. So let me know what you guys think. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jordan. So the call itself isn't super spoilery, although he does mention like a couple of the communities and stuff like that. But the reason I wanted to bring it up is that I think it's an interesting question. You know, does the show follow the comic a little bit too closely? Because it has been something I've struggled with over the last couple of seasons. I feel like I've been able to sort of see where the show is going a lot easier lately than I used to be able to.
Right.
And I've always struggled with that a bit because I don't like it as much. Like, I feel like when I know what's going to happen, or I can at least visualize the framework that they've put in place for a whole season. I'm not saying I don't enjoy it, but I feel like it's not quite as surprising to me when I watch it. And maybe
you can always stop reading the comic.
I could. And I'm already two or three issues behind at this point. So they'd have to get to a point where and the thing is, the comic is still way ahead of the show.
Oh, yeah.
So there's going to be some time before the show is actually caught up to a point that I haven't read.
You could always take copious amounts of mind-altering drugs to try and erase your memory.
Try and just forget everything I know.
Yeah, just try and forget about it. Just that part of your memory. You don't want to forget your kids or anything like that.
Yeah, the problem is selective memory erasing.
Yeah, so I recommend heavy drug use.
Okay, great. That's really bad advice. At least to get to that goal of memory erasing.
Just for you, just in this instance.
Right, okay. So you are, the interesting part is though, Jason, you are approaching a point in the show that is the point at which you stopped reading the comics.
That is correct. And I think I know the framework of what's going to happen for the remainder of this season, mm-hmm. but after that I got nothing.
You have nothing, which is great. And I don't want you to actually get caught up on the comics because I want you to be the sort of unseen half of this podcast, where you don't have the source material backing you up.
But the danger in that is if I get something right when I'm speculating, I may spoil something.
But that's fine. I mean, if you guess at something and it happens, I mean, what can you do? That's just, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, but if I guess at something that did happen and somebody else has, I don't know. I worry about such things.
Okay. Well, here's the reason I wanted to drop the spoiler warning, really, is because I'm going to mention what happens in the comic, the last issue that you read, and what we think this season is leading up to.
That's big.
It's big.
It's
big.
Serious, and listeners should heed this spoiler warning because it's pretty big.
You should heed the spoiler warning. This happened in issue number 100 of the comic, a big issue. So, again, if you haven't read the comics, you don't know what happens in number 100, I would turn us off right now. 3, 2, 1. All right. In issue number 100 of the comics, Negan takes a baseball bat to Glenn's head and kills Glenn.
Bashes his head in.
Bashes it in, just like we've foreshadowed on the TV show over and over and over again. off the top of my head, and I sent an email to a listener about this who wrote in about foreshadowing, you know, Glenn is one of the people at Terminus who was lined up in the trough about to be bashed with a baseball bat.
Right.
Then when they go to Noah's hometown, Glenn actually picks up a baseball bat off the ground. When they get to the hilltop and they're describing what Negan did, one of the characters says he killed someone right off the bat. You know, I mean, they're just dropping these hints over and over and over in there. I have no idea what they're going to do on the show. I'm pretty sure Negan is going to bash somebody's head in. But what I don't know is whether it will be Glenn or
Abraham
or somebody else.
Yeah.
But we've kind of talked around it for multiple episodes of the podcast now. And we're going to continue doing that sort of in the regular podcast as if we don't know what's going on, because I really don't want to even kind of hint at that possibility to people who really don't know what's coming up.
I was a little worried when we were recapping the episode on Monday, when Glenn was looking at the pictures of all the people that with their heads bashed in. I said on the podcast, Glenn, don't look at those.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe I had accidentally spoiled something for somebody, because that definitely has me worried that it's going to be Glenn.
Yeah, but I'm just like, they're... Yeah, and I don't think that spoiled anyone for anyone. I don't think you need to worry about it. It's just like whoever was looking at those photos, don't look at them. They're
right.
They're bad photos. But like, I just don't imagine they're going to do it to Glenn. On one hand, they're leading us down that road so strongly that I think to myself, it's got to be a fake out. Like they're trying to fake us out here. But then maybe they're doing the double reversal fake out, where they know we think it's going to be a fake out, so they're going to do it, and then that'll be the fake out,
right? So they're actually going to kill Glenn with a baseball bat.
That's right. So they're actually going to do it, and I don't know. Maybe they are, but the whole point of this conversation is to say that even though we know what happens in the comics, to bring this back to Jordan's call, I think there's still plenty here to enjoy and enough unknowns that even with having an idea of what the framework for the season is going to be, they can still make it good. They can still make it compelling and fun to watch.
Yeah, they could.
I think
we really don't know what's going to happen in the TV show.
No, exactly. And I think if it does end up being Glenn in the last episode of this season, getting his head caved in with a baseball bat, I think that's going to be unbelievably emotional for most listeners to see Glenn get killed like that, just so brutally, myself included. And if it's not Glenn, it's going to feel the same way, but be even more surprising because we don't know, we didn't predict who it was going to happen to.
Yep.
So, you know what? I think knowing the comic doesn't take too much away from it, and I have to just kind of get over the fact that I can kind of see the framework and then focus on the details, because that's where the excitement is.
Yeah.
And one more thing, they proved that to me this season when they did, just a couple episodes ago, when they did the scene where Jesse and her family was killed. I felt like I knew exactly what was going to happen in that scene, but it was still amazing to watch.
That's true.
Right? It totally blew me away. And I was like, you know, and I couldn't believe what I was watching at the time, with Carl getting shot and Jesse's getting her hand cut off and everybody getting eaten. So even when I know what's happening, it can still be good. And that's the point.
That is the point.
All right. Thank you, Jordan, for sending that in. And I hope sort of Jordan feels the same way, that, you know, the show is still enjoyable, even though he kind of knows what's going on.
I think we're gonna go back and forth, right? We're gonna diverge from the comic and then come back to it, and then diverge from the comic and come back to it.
Yeah, that's what they've always said. That's what Kirkman's always said, and the previous showrunners have always said that. I think Gimple likes to stick to it a little closer than the other guys, though.
Yeah,
that's my feeling. All right, just before we go, Jason.
Okay.
Prediction on who you think will get their head caved in by Negan. Do you think it'll be Glenn, or do you think it'll be somebody else?
It's gonna be Glenn.
You're going Glenn?
I'm going Glenn.
If not Glenn, who do you think the next likely candidate would be?
Carol.
Carol. It's a good call. I was going to say Maggie,
Could be Maggie.
Because, you know, she's part of Glenn. She's his wife. Yeah. But boy, oh boy, watching a pregnant woman get murdered
like
that.
Yeah, that's killing a baby on screen. And I've always been opposed to, you know, them doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of is. So, yeah, I think Maggie. But Carol, I think, is a good call. I think Abraham is just as likely. I think the only two that it will not happen to, definitely, are Rick and Carl. Personally, and people are going to hate me for this, but I kind of hope it's Daryl. Sorry, Daryl lovers.
It's not going to be Judith.
No,
it's not gonna be Judith. You can't do that. It's not going to, it might be Tobin.
Yeah, but if it's Tobin, I'm going to feel like that's a cop-out.
It is totally going to be a cop-out. Or it could be unnamed red shirt from Hilltop.
Oh, my right? God. I hope not. If they kill a red shirt, that's going to be such a cop-out. You know, you're going to, oh, I don't know. I'm not even sure how to feel about that, because it'll be like they're building up Tobin, right? They're giving him a relationship with Carol. And then maybe that's why they're doing this, to make us sort of feel something for Tobin. Yep. And then he's going to be killed. Maybe that'll work. I don't know. Maybe it'll work. But I feel right now like it's not going to work so well. So I want to see Daryl take the bat. Sorry, everybody.
It could be.
But I think I'm ultimately with you that it'll probably just be Glenn, and then we'll have to deal with that too. So, All right, let's end this sucker right here. We'll be back on Monday, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.